Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, you're stuck with me, but we talk about your cars, your husband's cars, your wife's cars, your kids' cars, the cars you want, the cars you hate, anything like that at all we can cover. Car repair, who do I go to, what should I say, stuff like that. That's all right in our wheelhouse, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Phoenix Body Works is just north of the 101 and just east of the I-17, is looking for an auto mechanic that has experience doing wheel alignments. As you can imagine, a body shop is going to have to put the front end back together. They're looking for a good guy, a guy who's a little gray in between the ears, a guy who's been around a while. They have really good equipment. They need steering and suspension knowledge and experience. They have excellent pay, performance incentive at a family-owned and operated business as opposed to a chain. And then your skills and knowledge obviously will be rewarded. Monday through Fridays, which is kind of nice with weekends off. So if you're interested in this Phoenix Body Works alignment technician that they're looking for, Rudy at phoenixbodyworks.com, Rudy at phoenixbodyworks.com, or you can email Mark at marksalem.com, and I'll pass it on. And Phoenix Body Works is PHX and then Body Works. Rudy at phoenixbodyworks.com. So let's, I have something I want to read you that to me is just unbelievable. I'm holding a work order that's dated 6/17 of 20. I'm not going to tell you the name of the shop, but a customer had given us this, and it had said that it needed some work done on the car and asked us to verify it. In the repair order, in a very predominant place, like right in the middle of the page, this is what it says. You shall not disparage, defame, or discredit any member or employee of so-and-so auto repair, or engage in any activity which would have the effect of disparaging, defaming, or discrediting so-and-so auto repair, its members, managers, affiliates, officers, directors, employees in any way, not to separate mother-in-laws and father-in-laws, our dogs, our cats, and all of our vendors. I don't know. That's an embarrassment for the industry. What do they hope to accomplish? Now, I'm not a lawyer, so if you're a lawyer, call in. But this is what I think. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not giving anybody legal advice. I think there has to be an agreement here before we can set this in stone. I think there has to be an agreement here, and I don't think you can get into trouble unless you do agree to this in advance and sign this. I don't know. I think that's the way it is. But to have this on the repair order and it's not signed by anybody, especially the customer who went into this shop for some issues. So it's just kind of an unusual situation, and you know and I know that this is all about reviews. Businesses today are very cognizant of what their reviews are. And the only people out there that have 5-star out of 1,000 customers is people who have lots of friends and family that are going on there. Because none of us can pull off, you know, a year's worth of time without somebody giving us a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, or 4-star. That's all there is to it. And I'm no different than anybody else. We just don't jive with some people that come in and we're not good to them, they're not good to us, whatever. So the car was taken in and it says, check needed head gaskets. And then it says, customer says they need head gasket, overheating, check and advice. And they put a thermostat and a gasket and a radiator cap on it for $208. So a thermostat, a gasket, and a radiator cap for $208. Now, of the $208, there is, customer says that he needs head gaskets, and it's $150. I don't like round numbers. I don't like it. I don't like it. 1 hour, $150. It didn't take 1 hour. It took 0.9, took 1.1, 1.2. You know, you just throw a number on there. The technician says, yeah, you know, what'd you have in this? Well, he had 0.6 of an hour. I got about 1 hour. So it's written that way. Anyway, we have a caller. Hopefully it's a lawyer. He can kind of square this away. But how can I help you today?
Well, I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
I bought 2010 Town and Country from a little small, you know, private dealership. And when I first got it, it seemed to be fine. And then after like the fourth day, it started having two problems. They may be related. I don't know. So I would drive from my work, which is like 35th and 10, let's say, up to Greenway on the 17. And by the time I get to Greenway, I come to the stop and the thing would die. And then it would start right back up and kind of hesitate a little bit. And then after about another 2 weeks, it started not wanting to shift.
Okay.
And I did have a check engine light come on. I haven't had a chance to plug it in yet. I have my own Snap-on, you know, reader. So
yeah.
Well, you I didn't know if you had any ideas.
Well, you know the code doesn't – the code just means the problem's right in Ohio. So,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. When it came to a stop, did it feel like that you were coming to a stop with a four-speed manual transmission and you forgot to push the clutch in? So it came to the stop and it goes, da-da-da-da-da. Did it feel like that?
Yeah, it kind of did that, yes. Yeah,
okay.
Sure. Yep.
Well, that sounds like the torque converter clutch is locked up. That's what it sounds like, because those symptoms that you have are... I mean, I thought torque converter clutch at the very beginning. And
okay.
It's really, if you pull it out of overdrive and
uh-huh.
And try that and drive it and see if that eliminates it.
So this thing has a shifter on the dash. You pull it down into drive, and then it has a negative on one side and a positive on the other, and that doesn't do anything.
Okay. So if
am I missing something?
Well, if you come to a stop and you push the negative, there should be some kind of an indication that you're going to go fifth, fourth, third, two, one, somewhere.
Let me try it right now. I'm sitting in the vehicle,
okay.
So now I'm in drive.
Okay.
Push it to the left. Yeah, it does do that. It
okay.
just goes to one, though.
Okay, that's fine. So I want you to drive around
click
in three.
It up. Two,
okay.
Three. Okay.
I want you to be in three and four all the time. And the question is,
okay.
Is this happening? If it's not
okay.
happening, then I've diagnosed it right. But the real question is why is it happening? Why is the converter staying locked up? Is it seeing the brake light switch? And make sure the brake lights
oh.
work, okay? Because that's one of the very important inputs is you hit the brakes and the computer goes, oh, he's slowing down, and the computer then unlocks the converter.
Oh,
okay.
So it could be in that switch. I'll check all that.
Okay.
Sure, yeah.
And then if it, how many miles are on it?
Let's see, 142, 130.
Okay. You could go back. Once you get it, you know, you would be a customer that we would embrace, because you walk in and you go, you know, I got this little problem. Let me explain what it is. It kind of feels like you're in a four-speed and you forgot to push the clutch in, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he says, and then you say, and then if I take it out of overdrive and I take it out of fifth or sixth gear, whatever the tall gear is on it, then it doesn't do it. And so it appears to be a transmission problem. Did you get any kind of warranty with it that you bought when you bought it?
Yeah, but not much. I think it was 15 days.
Okay.
It might have been 90 on the big major things. I'll have to look at my contract.
Okay. Well, you can still ask. You
sure,
can still say, is that something you can look at, and maybe can we come to an agreement on, you know. And what
right.
you're doing is you're out of warranty, so you're saying, can we come to an agreement on something like this? What happens if he comes back and says, okay, I'll pay half?
Right.
You know
I'll
what I mean?
I'll pay some, you pay some.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that's what I would try, okay?
So can I take the transmission out and change that converter myself?
No, because
do I have to change the whole converter?
No, the converter's being commanded to do that.
Also, it's something in the computer system,
yeah.
Not the converter itself.
Yes.
You've been a huge help, my friend.
And no, this is an old Chevrolet GM problem where we had this a lot, and we would just unplug the connection at the computer, or at the transmission, and then that was the diagnostic process.
Now, is there a way to check the transmission fluid on this rig? All I have is like a little cap and a fill. There's no real dipstick. Do you have to unplug something and see if it drains out? Is that how this works?
I don't know. There's just too many different varieties. But certainly check in the owner's manual or get on the internet and say, you know, owner's manual for this. And and something else, if you've got your scanner, it may tell you what the fluid filter or what the fluid level is if you go into the transmission folder and look at that.
Yep, good idea.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. You've been a huge help.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Hey, Gil, I need to log that, but I didn't get his name.
David,
okay. Where were you? Were you sleeping or were you in the bathroom, Gil? You just left me out here in Never Land.
Oh, I was awake, almost.
Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm still looking for a lawyer that can give us legal advice. The bottom line about reviews is we all have them. And you can always tell because the algorithm of somebody who's having all their neighbors and friends call in is an extraordinary amount of detail. So if they go into great lengths to just blow smoke everywhere, and their bathrooms were clean, and even the shuttle bus driver had brushed his teeth, and then I went in, and gosh, the lobby was clean. Well, forget all of that. Did your car get fixed?
1 minute.
That's kind of the way it is. So reviews are good. All of us have to deal with good ones and bad ones, and frankly, I'll speak for myself. Some of the bad ones are our fault. Some of the bad ones are our fault. Then the next step is trying to come to some kind of an agreement. Well, we just talked to David, and he has a car, and he's probably out of some either 15-day warranty or 90-day warranty or something like that. And, of course, there's times the customer's not happy because the warranty's expired and they think that the shop should step up anyway. The response most of us would have in a kind way is that you're not allowed to lengthen the warranty, and we're not allowed to shorten the warranty. And we both agreed on 90 days or 6 months or 2 years or whatever. But I'm not going to shorten it, and with all due respect, I would object if you make it longer. That's kind of how it works. But those are the nice conversations. I want to read this to you again. This is funny. You shall not disparage, defame, discredit any member or employee of this auto repair shop. I'm not going to give you the name, but this I'm reading off the work order. Or engage in any activity that would have the effect of disparaging, defaming, or discrediting this auto repair shop. Let's call it Jones Auto Repair Shop. It's not Jones, but just... Or its members, managers, affiliates, officers, directors, employees in any way. So it's members, managers, and affiliates, officers, and directors. So pretty much, you're just not allowed to say anything about anybody and all their families for five generations and all their vendors and everybody else. And I think that really makes our industry look stupid. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Well, we're here on a car show. And the car show means you call in and I help you out the very best I can. And I need to tell you, though, it's just like our previous caller, David. I'm as good as the information you give me. And there's three answers to if I have a question, yes, no, or I don't know. And we can usually work together. And the purpose of this show is like David, is give you something to try to help you determine what portion of the car you have this problem in. But more important, if you describe this to the shop, I promise you, you'll save money on the diagnostic side. I'm driving my car, and if you go over 45, 50 miles an hour, and then you're going to come to a stop, as you come to a stop, the car jerks like I left it in fourth gear, but I didn't push the clutch in. Jerk, 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 and then when I get to a stop, it dies. And I put it in park or neutral, starts right up, and I move on. I mean, we hug customers for that kind of information. That's what we're interested in. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. One of the guys that's really good in diagnostic is Kurtz Auto Repair up on I-17 in Bell. Been around since 1987. Kurtz is a good guy. I know him personally. I know his family. I know his staff. He's good on domestic and import, both gas and diesel. I tease you that you can take your lawn equipment there, but he always gets mad at me when I do that. Anyway, he has ASC certified technicians, and many of them there are master technicians, which means they've passed all the automotive tests, which is eight of them. So you can be ASC certified in alignments and ASC certified in climate controls, air conditioning, and heater. But when you're a master tech, you've passed them all. you're one of the PhDs of our car repair certification. So Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell Road. If you live in that area and you're looking for a good garage, I'd like to suggest Kurtz Auto, and that would be a good place for you to start. There's lots of things in the in our world, in the customer, in the repair world, and let me just explain. One of my first jobs was at a gas station in Tempe, Broadway and Priest, called Ken's Broadway Shell. And I started there as a 15-year-old kid, and pumped gas. And then ultimately, I kind of morphed into, can I change a tire, patch a tire every once in a while, and then from there, oil changes. But that was 1968. And I've owned my own repair shop since 1979. So I've been around the block, and I've been a master, and now I no longer take tests because I was a master tech for 25 years. And so you become emeritus, which is a fancy word for retired, but sometimes you're not retired, but you still get the designation. The idea is that if you deal with a technician who's ASE certified, chances of success are enhanced because they've been certified by somebody who says, yes, they have the skills and the fundamental skills and the fundamental knowledge of how this system works. So it's not like I'm suggesting you go into a shop and say, I only want an ASE master tech to work on my car. But most of us have the plaques in our lobby. So you can look at the plaques and see if they have four techs in the shop. You can see that you look up and they got four masters. That's a home run. That's the kind of shop that you I would suggest that you kind of hang close to. What customers we don't want, I'll speak for myself, so I won't speak for the industry. I don't want you to come in and tell me what the guy on Google said. I don't want you to come in and tell me how to fix your car. I don't want you to come in and refuse to answer questions. I don't want you to come in and tell me that according to the internet, I should only charge you this much money. All of those are really negative things. That's not a good way to start a relationship. And most of us are not going to dance to that kind of music. If the guy in Google was as good as he thinks he is and as good as you think he is, he wouldn't be on Google on 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He'd be working for me and other shops at a lot of money. We have technicians that make $40,000 to $100,000 a year. So if he was really, really good, he'd have a Monday through Friday job. He'd be working on cars, making a whole bunch of money. He wouldn't be on Google in his underwear telling everybody how to fix their cars. I'm not capable of fixing your cars on the radio. But what I am capable of doing is asking you questions to kind of hone in, and then I'll make suggestions on what you say, just like I did David. It's kind of, this is what the car's doing. And if you want to take a ride, I promise not to have your technician for longer than 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm pretty sure I can demonstrate how to make it happen. And the key on David's was go faster than 45 or 55 miles an hour, then come to a stop and apply your brakes, and the problem should exist. Those are the things that where you save lots of diagnostic money. And the diagnostic money is to get from point A to point B. Otherwise, we get a good description from the customer, we're able to verify the problem, then we have to find the cause of the problem. The real tough ones are the intermittent problems. And sometimes you just have to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's all. I'm not suggesting the car's overheating and their oil light comes on. Please don't misunderstand. But I've got a vibration. I feel something in the seat of my pants on Tuesdays at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and sometimes not. That's kind of an intermittent problem. Your shop should guide you. Watch for this. Is the vibration in the seat of your pants? Is it in the steering wheel? Those are the kinds of things that we can help you with as an industry when we have a caller. And who might that be, Gil?
That would be John.
John, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, this is Johnny Boy. This is your nephew.
Oh.
What's happening?
When did you get out of jail?
Yeah, when you were sitting there, you were reminiscing just a few minutes ago about working at the Shell station in downtown Tempe, and I started thinking about that, and started thinking about working at ASU and then working at the old mobile station at 51st Street in Elliott, and we survived the 80s and the gas shortages and the gas crunch. And I know since you were reminiscing, I don't know if you have any really good juicy stories you can tell us about Ahwatukee Mobile.
No. No.
No.
First of all, much of the stuff that happened at Ahwatukee Mobile, the statute of limitations hasn't run out. So, no, I'm not going to discuss that. Those were the Wild West days. Oh, okay. You know that. There were gas station guys back then that if you got crappy with them, they'd go get their tow truck and push your car off the lot. Of course, if you wouldn't just drive it off the lot. Those were the days where you opened up your bathroom and you found some guy all whacked out in drugs or drunk in the corner of the women's bathroom. Those were the days where we had gas shortages and you had people lined up and you had fist fights at the islands because somebody cut the line. Gil, just take him down because we're going to get into trouble and I don't want to do it. So with all due respect, Johnny, we're not going to do this because you're going to get me in trouble. I'm just giving examples of other service station owners back then that told me these stories. Those were the Wild West days in the 70s and in the 80s when the real thing was the gasoline wars or the gasoline shortages. There's something else back then. Those were the days that we started moving car stuff around. We went from points and condenser to electronic ignition in 74, 5, 6, and 7, and 8. Ford, Chevys, and Chrysler.
1 minute.
So we got rid of the points and condenser. Then we also got some electronics where we had different things on the truck that were now done. Instead of been manually with cables and stuff, we were shifting the transmissions electronically. So that was the beginning of where we're at today. Up until the 70s and probably the mid-70s and going backwards, because we went to electronic ignitions on Fords and Chevys, 75, 76, somewhere around in there, 74 to 76. That was a big deal. And I have to admit, and everybody else will admit back then, is we were scared. We didn't understand electronics. We didn't understand how we get from point A to point B. We didn't understand how we were going to diagnose a problem. And if it was related to the electronic ignition, how do you find that out? So it was really scary back then. And then in the mid-80s, we get carburetors that have electronic controls on them, and that was tough. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to noon talking about car repair stuff. If you've got an argument at the kitchen table and it involves cars, what color this is, or which car is better, and what about this fuel economy, and why does my wife get better than I do, and all that jazz, 602-315-4321.
Wrong number. 602-508.
508-0960. Great. Thank you very much, Gil. You are a good guy. Hugh, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning. Hey, just a quick question. I have a 2009 Ford Expedition that has dual zone air conditioning. It's an EL, so pretty big car. Maybe a year or so ago, I started hearing a clicking sound in the right rear passenger wheel well in the back whenever the rear air conditioning was on. Now, over time, the rear air conditioning won't come on in the back of the car, or intermittently it'll be on and then it'll just shut off. Sometimes when you start the car and it's cold, it's working, then you drive around and then suddenly it's not working. I've been told by couple mechanics, friends of mine and stuff, they're like, well, we can do it, but taking the plastic out in a car that's, 2009, we're probably going to break some of the plastic trying to get to what we have to get to. The question I have for you is it the kind of thing that I can fix myself? I mean, I'm pretty handy with my car, but and I think I can get the plastic out without breaking it, but is there going to be something in that wheel well that's controlling the blowing of the cold air in the back of the car?
Well, first of all, if you're going to start taking plastic apart, there's a little crow's foot kind of thing that you can buy, and it's a handheld screwdriver that has a V on the end of it, and it's kind of angled. And so you slide that, you determine that the plastic's connected right here, you slide that in between, and you kind of pry it apart. Then there's going to be these little plastic clips that you walk down to the auto parts store and say, give me 10 of these. So people say, oh, yeah, you're going to break the plastic. That's because they don't want to do it because they don't know what they're talking about. So, I mean, this on a one, let me change your question. Mark, on a 1 to 10 scale, taking the plastic on the wheel, well, where are we? A 1. So it's no big deal. As far as what's going on underneath there, How does it blow? Forget the front back. How does the front blow? Is it blow nice and cold?
It does.
Okay. Does this noise go away on max versus normal?
You know, it's not consistent, so it's not on all. I don't hear the noise all the time.
Okay.
I just hear it periodically.
Is the clicking directly related to the fan operation?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what I do is I'd pull a wiring diagram on it first and just see what's back there. You know, where's the relay that gives you the different fan speeds, 1, 2, 3, 4? So is it up underneath the hood, or is it, in the back, in the pillar there on the right-hand side, the very last pillar? That's the area you're probably going to be working in if that's where the lines go. So, yes, it could very well be. Now, it could be the switch up front when you turn the rear air on, and it can also be the blower switch up front when you control the speed of the air. I'd like you to try all four speeds and find out if one of them is different than the other. Otherwise, I'd keep it in high all the time and see if it changes this sequence or changes the cadence of the clicking. So there's more diagnosis that needs to be done before you just go in there and start pulling all that plastic apart. So you can find a wiring diagram on the internet, and you're probably going to find a relay back there that controls. 1, 2, and 3 go through a resistor. So that's why we get slow air at 1, 2, and 3. 4, we bypass the resistor and we just give you a full 12 volts, 13 volts that the alternator's putting out. We're going to give you all of that for high speed. So that's why I want you to determine if it's related to 1, 2, or 3. Does it happen at 1, 2, and 3 speeds? Does it happen in 4? Is there a difference between 1, 2, and 3 and 4? And that'll help you decide where you're going to go with this. This isn't a big deal. It's just not.
Okay.
So I ask you if it's cold, because if it's got a low pressure switch in it and it's low on Freon, then you're going to say, well, sometimes it's warm, sometimes it's cold. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we ought to fix that first. But if it blows cold, then, and all you've got is that clicking noise, then I just don't think it's a good idea to go to that corner and start ripping stuff apart. I think we need to find out what's in there, and then we can sometimes bypass it up front, and we can say, okay, we're just going to run it on high all the time and see what happens. So there's some diagnostic processes that need to happen. Most shops would probably charge you less than their shop rate to find out what it is. Now, there's always the possibility, and listen, 10-15% of the time it's $100, and I'm just using round numbers, $100 to find it and $10 to fix it. Okay? We have a bad connection, or we got a burnt terminal on the relay, or something like that. So it happens, but it's not real common, but that's the best you can hope for is, and you hope for the shop fixes the bad connection as opposed to selling you all the parts that are in there, which is kind of a cover your butt kind of attitude. So anyway, good luck to you, Hugh. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. So if you'd like to talk about cars, give us a call. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, David, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, I've got an old Mercedes-Benz, and it's pretty tight, but we started getting a slight wobble, and my tires were getting low, so I replaced the tires. Well, the wobble is still there, and at low speeds, I can feel it, you know, it's like a rocking chair. At 10 miles an hour, it's, you know, back and forth, but when I get up to high speeds, it goes away. When I get above 70, or around 70, it starts going away. It's a smooth ride.
Okay. The first symptoms helps me. The second doesn't help me. Do you work on this yourself?
I didn't put the tires on, but okay.
Okay, well, here's the reason I ask you. Okay, here's the reason I ask you. This isn't that hard. You lay underneath the front of it, and you make sure that the person in the steering wheel that's got the steering wheel and the gas pedal in their possession doesn't hate you. So you lay underneath the front of it, and you watch both front tires. And what I do is I just grab a hold of both front tires. My head is in the middle of the front tires, and I just touch both front tires with my hands. And I have the person inside take the steering wheel and just go left 2-3 inches, and then slowly go back to center, and then go right 2-3 inches. Center, left, center, right. And you'll have a delay somewhere in there. So one of those tires is going to move before the other one does. Now you have to look at the steering, and in your Mercedes you have a rack and pinion assembly. So either the rack is moving left or right, and the rubber bushings are bad on it, or the tie rod ends are bad. But you're going to see the tie rod end, and there's going to be two pieces of it, an upper and a lower. And so you'll see the top wobble, but the bottom not move. And so you need a tie rod end. It could be lower control arms. There's a lot it can be. But I don't really care that it doesn't do it on high speeds, because chasing that red herring isn't going to do me any good. I really like the symptoms on the low speed, and the steering wheel shakes a little bit left and right, indicating a wobble. So this really isn't a tough thing to diagnose. You just have to make sure the person behind the wheel doesn't hate you, because if they put it in drive, then your head's going to be flat.
All right. So it's a front end issue then. You think it's ball joints, tie rods, something to that effect, idler arms?
No, I'm pretty sure it has a rack and pinion on it, so I'm pretty sure it doesn't have any idler arms.
Oh, yeah, it does have a rack and pinion, actually. Yeah. And the rack and pinion, when I bought the vehicle, my speculation was that that was one of the reasons they sold it. My daughter was driving it one day, and she called me in tears and said that it was leaking oil. And I said, no way. It's not leaking oil. And she said, and her boyfriend was with her, and he's a pretty intelligent guy. And he said, yeah, Mr. Callahan, I think it's, did I just say that? I think it's oil. Okay.
Well, what color
and,
is it?
Well, it turns out it was oil. It was coming out of the rack and pinion.
Okay, but that's
and
red.
What it was,
and see, that's why it's important. The color on it is important, but go ahead.
Well, it was clear. It was a clear fluid, and the way I found it was I put it up on, you know, just drove it up on the ramps and started it up, and man, it started squirting oil out, and I'm like going, that is really weird. It looks like it's coming from the rack and pinion.
Okay.
And I went through it, and I'm like, all right, how much is a rack and pinion for this Benz? And it was pretty pricey, taking it apart.
David, this is going off on a different direction.
All right.
There's a high pressure and a low pressure line that goes to that rack and pinion. Then you got two joints on either end of it, so there's four places it can leak. So just coming to the conclusion.
The line.
Okay. All right. So yeah. the issue is the Mercedes, and on your Mercedes, it's got two U-shaped bolts that hold the rack someplace. And if the rack is moving left and right, then you'll see that. So that was the advice that I gave you, was that's how to identify. And I know it's in the front end because you said the steering wheel shook. But if you're telling me if it's really your butt shaking, then the vibration's in the back. So steering wheel and your butt are two different symptoms. But anyway, good luck to you. And you do obviously exhibit, car repair skills and stuff like that. This, you know, if you're going to do a tie rod end, you're going to have it aligned afterwards. You can count the threads and all that jazz, but you can wipe out a set of tires in 2 weeks, or one tire in 2 weeks if you get the toe, you know, not set right. So it might not be a bad idea to have somebody do that. And speaking of Mercedes, I want to tell you a story about a Mercedes. We did a Mercedes not too long ago, and our job was to suck the Freon out and put new Freon in it because it was low. So we did that. Then the air conditioning didn't work at all. So we called our good friend Goody, who's in North Scottsdale, who knows Mercedes-Benz, who only works on a Mercedes-Benz. He's been around since Fred Flintstone was a child. And Goody knows more about Mercedes-Benz than I'll know about Chevrolets or Fords in my whole life. So he laughs at us, which really makes you feel good. And he says, bring it up here and I'll fix it for you. So we take it up there and he plugs some magic box in and they talk to one another. And then my daughter calls him and she says, what did we do wrong? And this is what he told us. This is the truth. He says, when you are doing what you're doing, you cannot do anything to the car. You can't move the hood. You can't open the door. You can't shut the door. You can't do anything to this car. And so Andy went to Eddie and she says, did you do anything? And he goes, yeah, I opened the door a couple times. And Goody says, that's it. You can't do that. And so we learned something because Mercedes has idiosyncrasies that only God knows why it happens that way. But there is a learning process. BMWs are the same too. There is a learning process as you do some technical stuff. And the computer has to be, it has to have a focus that's just there. And it can't be dealing with, you open the door, and so I got to turn on the dome light, and I got to see whose butt's coming into the car, and did they open the back door or the front door, and do I need to roll the window down, all this other kind of stuff. So there's all this traffic going on, and the Mercedes-Benz has a hard drive, but evidently it's not big enough to be able to handle that the door opens and the dome light comes on and still monitor what's going on underneath the hood. Anyway, through the grace of God, he fixed it for us. We just didn't know what to do. And of course, it was from Tempe to North Scottsdale, but he was generous. He was nice. And if you have a Mercedes-Benz and every time you open the door, and then the horn barks at you, Goody's the guy that you need to go to because he's that good. So there's my free commercial for Goody, but I'm telling you about a guy that if my mother owned a Mercedes, thank God she doesn't. If she owned a Mercedes-Benz, and I don't care if it's one of the first ones that was ever made or one of the newer ones, Goody would be the guy that I would go to. There's a couple other shops that I like a lot, too. Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs up in North Phoenix, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate's a great guy. He knows Ford, Chevy, and Dodge diesels, light-duty diesel trucks. He doesn't do the big dogs. And if you have a car that needs an oil change, he can do that for you as well. So Nate's been around a long time. I'm really impressed with his skills, and there are times that I lean on Nate because I need his advice. And like I ask you for, please give me the symptoms and let me ask you some questions, and I afford Nate the same kind of consideration. And I'd say 75% of the time he can set me in the right direction. If he needs marital counseling, then he calls me and I can do the same for him. On the other side of town, there's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma are just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. I say this with a warm heart. Thelma's the kind of young lady that you hope your son brings home, and Brian is the same thing. You hope that your daughter would bring home Brian, although they're married, and you get my meaning. They are really good people. And it's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you. There's shops in Mesa, and they're good. But one reason or another, and most of the time it's they don't apply to be part of Mark Salem's Best Car Repair Shops. And that's okay with me. But I'm not going to send people to them unless we have an agreement that I have with all the other shops. And the agreement says is that when we run across a customer complaint, we're going to work on it together. And if the shop is told by somebody to make a repair and the shop refuses, then Mark Salem will up to $5,000. And obviously I have to have an agreement with them that's in writing that talks about our relationship and our ability to take care of good customers. Speaking of good customers, Automatic Transmission Exchange is Fred Flintstone. He's been around since 1968. He knows automatic transmissions like nobody else does. He's a really good guy, and he has a good staff. And he's down there on 40th Street in Washington. So if you go up and down Washington near 40th Street on the north side of the road, you'll see a place with a transmission on a sign, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Talking about customers, we had a customer walk in a year ago. I just remember this like it was yesterday. And the guy came in, and he was already in a bad mood. And so he asked the service writer, how much is an airbag for my car? And he says, well, let me look up your car in our computer system. He goes, are you in our computer system? Have you been in before? And he says, no. And he says, okay, well, what kind of car is it? And he said, I'll just make up a car. It's a 79 Lincoln Continental. And so he goes, okay. So he says, what do you want? And he says, well, just the cost of the airbag. And so he goes into parts, and parts says, well, there's three different models. Ask him which one it is. And so they go back out front, and they said, do you have it here? Can we look at it? And he goes, no. And he said, which one is it? Is it an A, B, or C? And he gets really mad. And so they go back into parts, and they get all three prices on all three airbags. Now, at this point, this entire gyration has not been income-producing, and it's not likely to become income-producing. But he's just wasted a whole bunch of time from my parts department and my service writer. Then when they give him the prices, he starts to argue with them about the prices. Now, we already know that he's going to tell us to put an airbag in this, and it's been diagnosed by somebody else, and if the airbag doesn't fix the problem, then it's our fault. And we have to go diagnose the real problem and then tell him what it is. So I was kind of in the wings there, and I was kind of watching what they were doing. And then the gentleman got mad, used some bad words, and he left. So I went over to the service writer, and I said, you just learned something important. And he goes, well, he says, you need to know something. And I said, what's that? And he goes, I already knew this was going to be a train wreck. And so he said, I added some significant money to each one of these airbags so that he would go back to the place that gave him a cheaper price. And I said, I don't have any complaints with that. So there are times repair shops, and that probably happens to us once a year, there are times we're going to hit you between the eyes with a big number because we don't want you. And if you say that we're really expensive, it's okay. I can live with that. We're not, but I can live with that. So it's one of those things that if a shop gives you an estimate for an airbag that's $5,000 and you ultimately buy it for $2,100, there was a message there. And it's kind of like we, with all due respect, ma'am or sir, we just don't think we're going to get along because we're not even going steady yet, and already there's animosity between the two of us. On the other hand, there are customers that walk in the door that front office staff in all kinds of repair shops will just bend over backwards for. Single mothers that look like grandmothers, young ladies with a couple of kids in her arms, those kinds of people, men that come in without telling us what's going on and how to fix their cars and genuinely have a handle on the symptom and can demonstrate it or show it to us. Those are the kind of people that we want to be your hero. So we're going to strap on our Superman cape. We're going to go outside. We're going to talk to you about it, and we're going to demonstrate our diagnostic skills. And, of course, sometimes we're going to get close, but sometimes we need more work to get close. So you can be whatever customer you want, but I think I speak for probably 90% of the car repair shops out there that there's some things that customers do that are not beneficial to the customer. So if I bring those to your attention, then if you know somebody or if you happen to be one of those, then it's just different. I remember a lady came in one time, and she had a handful of receipts, and clearly she had spent a bunch of money and nobody could fix it. And I do remember that we fixed it for her, and we just told her it was a loose wire, which was a lie, and we gave her her keys back, and we all felt great about that. We felt great about that. She later became a customer of ours, but that's the kind of thing that a lot of shops will do, is they'll just take care of it. We'll be back with another hour. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to be here until noon talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696, 888-960-9696. Blackwell Auto is at 40th and Greenway, and I've known Tom for 20 years or more. He is a really good technician. He's a really good shop owner. He knows right from wrong, as all of them do. He works on old cars and new cars, big cars, motorhomes. He works on everything, the gamut from the top to the bottom. And he knows what he's doing, but even more important, the guys that are really doing a good job know right from wrong. So if the technician comes in and says that it needs a transmission, then he comes back in later and says it needs a transmission controller. We're smart enough to know that the transmission didn't fix it, and now he wants a controller. So it's at this point, most of us get the entire shop together and see if we can diagnose this problem without throwing more parts at it. And obviously, it's a big deal. We have a caller, Gil. Who might that be?
Hey, hello to Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi there. Got a question about a 7.3 Power Stroke.
Okay.
2001. Engine fire. What would cause that? They don't have gasoline or spark plugs. What do you think would cause an engine fire?
Well, any kind of oil, even coolant. Coolant is an ethylene glycol, which is an alcohol, and it's flammable. You can pour coolant on the ground and light a match and oftentimes get it to light.
Really?
Yeah. And do you have any idea? I mean, it has to be a fluid, or it's either a fluid or it's an electrical fire. Do you have a fix on what it is?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I just bought it at an auction. It's a 2001 F450 dually. Okay. And I couldn't get the hood open. They've had the hood open, but I pulled the handle and the hood wouldn't pop, so I couldn't look at it. I just know it had an engine fire. So I want to know kind of where to look, and then if I can just, I can take it to somebody, and maybe you can tell me who to take it to in the Phoenix area.
Well, let's talk about what needs to be done first. Obviously, get the hood open, but I think you need to get it running first. And the good news is mm-hmm. diesels are going to have some electrical, solenoids and stuff like that, but they're not going to have fuel lines and spark plug wires and all that other jazz. And the basic fuel delivery system is going to withstand a fire. So let's get it running. Okay. And then we'll find the leak. And that's what I would do.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how much money you spent for that, but that's worth a lot of money. You know that?
Yeah. I have a feeling it was. It's even got a gooseneck hitch on it and a brake controller. The truck's in pretty nice shape. So I thought I got a good deal on it for $3,000.
Yeah. Here's why it's very valuable. First of all, it's that diesel didn't have a lot of emissions on it, and everybody agrees that the 7.3 was a monster motor. It was the best motor they ever had. I saw an Expedition whatever the heck it is. There's a couple of them there that went not too long ago for $25,000 or $30,000, and this thing had a 7.3 in it.
Wow.
And it was a beautiful vehicle. But everybody knows, they hope that they're walking through the Safeway parking lot and seeing an elderly gentleman get out of one of those, and you could give him a business card, and he'll call you when he decides he doesn't want it anymore. But this isn't going to be tough. what part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay. East or west of the 17?
At the 17, just west of there.
I'd go to Strictly Diesel. He's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate could figure this out, no problem. No
okay,
problem at all.
Is he on Pinnacle Peak? I can look him up, I guess.
Yeah, Strictly Diesel. He's east of the 17 on Pinnacle Peak Road, but Nate's a go-to guy for me. We share skills on diesels, but he's slightly better than I am. He's got more experience, and really, Strictly Diesel means Strictly Diesel. Mark's pretty good on motorhomes and cars and stuff, but if it gets down to some kind of a contest, I'm going to acquiesce kind of quick. So,
okay. What's the guy's name over there?
Nate. He owns it, and he's a little taller than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he has hands like tennis rackets, and so when you meet him, you'll know exactly who's in front of you. So,
well, you know, you have to be that tall to reach down into that diesel engine, because that thing's way up there.
Oh, and, you know, your 450, sometimes we'll just take the front tires and wheels off of it and put it on a rack and just drop it down to the ground. And we don't have to mess, we don't have to crawl in and out. But taking the hood off and getting this thing running, there's no question Nate can do that. I mean, and then once you get it running, then you'll find out if there's anything else. Now, obviously, a lot of the air tubing is going to be gone from the fire, so from the turbo to the intake and all that other kind of stuff, but that's not really a big deal. The good news is that if this was some kind of a power steering leak or a coolant leak, there's a good chance that the wiring harnesses weren't. Now, let me ask you about the hood, though. Is the hood just burnt to a crisp, or is there still paint on it?
No, there's dirt. There's no evidence from the outside of any fire.
Okay, well, that's good. That tells me it didn't cook for a while, because if the whole hood was discolored and it had no paint in it, I'm going to move my estimation of the cost associated with no paint on the hood and the windshield's melted. That's a 10. And the paint's still good and there was a fire underneath the hood. That's a 1.
Yeah.
So... All right, well,
I'm thinking maybe it cooked the wire or something and it doesn't run because of that. But I'm gonna get the hood open. I'm gonna have it towed home, get the hood open, and I'm gonna charge the battery and see what it does. I'm gonna look around and see if I can locate where the problem is or a leak, And if I can, I'm going to take it up to that guy and have him just go through it and make sure everything's okay and fix whatever's wrong with it. And I want to use it. You know, it's a cool truck.
Okay. Let me give you some advice. Even at my shop, okay. What you want to say to them is I wanted you to do three things. Get it to start, move, and stop. And call me at each one of those stopping points, okay? So, and let's just start there. Don't open your book to me or Nate. Don't hand us a blank check. Just let's, okay. I want you to, and when you get it to start and run, that means alternator and starter and batteries and all that stuff. And then you get it to start, run, and stop. And obviously stop, you have to have a HydroBoost system on that thing, which is high pressure power steering fluid, to get it to stop. And if that was if you have a high pressure hose that's squirting power steering fluid on the exhaust of that diesel, then that could very well be your cause of the fire. So you don't want him to get it running, and then you get in it and go to hit the brakes, and nothing happens, and you end up in Levine. So you're gonna want to have him do something like that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's worth spending a little money on. It's nice, you know. It's a good deal for a quad cab truck that's got everything on it. And you know, I thought, well, I can't lose on that kind of thing, you know, because it, you know, a fire is a fire, but at least if the internals of the engine is okay, I'll be fine.
I don't think you need to worry about the internals. I think there's a whole lot of wiring harnesses and a whole lot of hoses. But then again, if it's an 01 and nobody had done them, then they're due anyway. So, but like you said,
okay,
I think there's a lot of guys that are chomping at the bit right now to say, Mark, get him to give his phone number out so we can buy it from him. And I'm going to say, no, don't give me your phone number. Well, good luck to you, Mike. Good luck to you, Mike. All right, you bet.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th and Indian School, could handle that as well. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto. Ellen's at the front counter. Bob's in the shop. They have some really good technicians. They're really nice, been around the block a lot, and they're not the kind of shop that's going to be gone tomorrow after you spend a lot of money. So if you're in that 38th Avenue and Indian School, or actually if you're anywhere within about a 10-mile radius of that and you've got a problem when you start the car, the radio station changes and the fog lights come on, then that's the kind of, wow, I think I can track this down kind of problem that they're really well-known and good for. So that's Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and we've got another caller.
Say hello to Hector.
Hector, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I enjoy your show immensely.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
I'm asking for some tips on changing the spark plugs. I have a 2001 F-150 that I had since it was new. I believe it was made in June of that year. And then I also have an Expedition 2001 that was made in December of 2000.
Okay.
And I'm asking advice because I changed the spark plugs years ago. And I think it's time to change the spark plugs again. And I'm apprehensive because on the Expedition, after 20 miles or so, they started popping out. I don't think they had helicoils at that time. But we had to get a whole new engine after somebody tried to Mickey Mouse it, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it was new to everybody how to fix it. But I'd like to change the plugs on the truck now, and I don't know if they have helicoils or they made some kind of service change in between the 6 months. So
okay, I can.
Please give me some advice.
Okay, I don't think you should. Well, first of all, how old are the spark plugs? How many miles?
I changed them about 65, so probably 70,000.
Okay, well, I really wouldn't worry about them right now. I think I'd like you to go 100, but that's okay. The answer to your question is we used to blow spark plugs out of those Fords a lot. And they had the A kit, then the B kit, then the C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. And we had so many different ways to do it. But today, we have a kit, my industry, and so do we, has a kit that does it right. And so, yes, and admittedly, it happened at my shop. You just blew a spark plug. Let's put some new threads in there. By the time a lot of shops were done, it was a mess, and you had to replace the head. It just got really ugly. So the answer is, now, if you've got a new engine in there, then we need to make sure that we use a little bit of dielectric on the threads, and we need to make sure, and we need to make sure that we bring them out gently and we put them back in gently, and we need to make sure we torque them right. So if you want to have them done, then I suggest you have somebody do
one
it
minute.
For you. And then the risk is theirs, not yours. So, mm-hmm. and then I still think you can wait on those. But if you want to, pull one out and just look at the center electrode. If the center electrode looks like, you know, up, vertical, horizontal, and down, and then it's nice and square, then that's not a worn spark plug. On the other hand, if it's got a little pin on it, then it's a high-performance spark plug, and you'll know the difference. But at 70,000 miles, I'm just... And you don't have any drivability problems, and you haven't said anything about fuel economy or black smoke or anything.
It's getting old. And this is actually the one that didn't get the new engine.
Okay.
So it has about 140,000 miles on it. So.
Okay, well, that one, I say, yeah. But you just... The guy's got to have had to seen this before. He has to be careful. He starts pulling out the... Here's the deal. At the end of the spark plug, the last thread will grow this circle of carbon on it because the last thread often sticks inside the combustion chamber. So you start bringing it out, and the first thing you notice is it doesn't pop and come out. So you're going to have to muscle it out. Well, when you bring that ring of carbon out, it takes the threads with it. So we know how to get that out of there without bringing the threads with it. Our industry, and everybody's got a different way to do it. A lot of guys will just put some oil down in there and soak that carbon and let it sit for a day or two until it gets soft and bring the spark plugs out. Some guys use gas. Some guys use carburetor cleaner, whatever. You're just going to get that end.
That would be my next question. If I decide to do it myself, should I put some liquid wrench or something?
Something. You're going to have to just, you're going to bring it out slowly. And if you get, you know, by the time you move your wrench from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, in that area, in that 25% of a circle, it better break loose and then come right out. Mm-hmm. But if you move your wrench from 6 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and then all of a sudden you're going to muscle it to 12 o'clock, you've already gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
You've already gone too far. So, yeah, if you want to use liquid wrench or carburetor cleaner, or carburetor cleaner handles carbon pretty good. So that's the reason why a lot of guys will just use that. So, anyway, got to run, but thank you very much. That's a great question, and I don't think I've had that in a long time. But good luck to you. It's 11:18. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five lines, 602-508-0960. Well, it's 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you, I'll do that slower, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I know that he's a good guy. I know he knows how to work on cars. He's a really great fisherman. If you want to talk fishes and lures and bait and all that kind of stuff, go sit in his lobby for a little while. Anyway, he's at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. He's a good guy. And if you're in that area and you don't have a car repair shop, I suggest you try him. And if you want a second opinion, he'd be a good shop to stop by. So that's Action Auto Repair. Harry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
You know, I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. I take it you're not a Ford fan.
No, I really am, Harry. I love Fords because I make so much money working on those son of a guns. And I'm being facetious for the rest of you because we work on Toyotas and Hondas and all the rest of them. But Harry's a Ford guy, so I thought I'd throw that away.
Well, I hadn't been for a long time. I bought a pickup last year, you know. It's getting ready for, I think, an oil change. It's got about 3,000 on it. It's new. New one, and I'm kind of looking at maybe getting the oil change. Since it is, you know, first oil change and everything, I think at about 3 is usually pretty good, isn't it?
Harry, you raise your right hand. Harry, as God is your witness, have you read the owner's manual on that yet?
Oh, yeah, I have. But I kind of, you know... They're in the business of, you know, making things break. So I try to do the best I can with, you know.
No. That thing came with synthetic oil. It's got a 10,000
mile. Well, it's semi-synthetic.
Okay, it's so semi. It's got a 7,500-mile oil change interval. And your motor's not going to care. And that's best for the environment. And you are best served by following those directions and checking, but your motor's not going to love you anymore if you change the oil every 100 miles. It's not going to last forever, especially on your Ford, no matter what. But but really, the answer is yes, you should have it changed, but it's way too early. And you're wasting oil, and you're wasting natural resources. And if I hear that you changed the oil early, I'm going to tell everybody that I know your email address, and they should talk to you about wasting finite natural resources.
Yeah, but this is it's got a twin turbo, it's a 3.5, and they're a little bit more of a different breed of cat than just a 5 liter V8 or so.
It the oil's going to oxidize in a semi-synthetic at about 400 degrees. Harry, if you get that motor to 300, it's toast anyway.
Right.
And so the oil has the protection necessary for your twin turbo, and if it's a semi-synthetic. Do you know what weight they put in?
Yeah, they're 530.
Okay. Harry, I could be wrong, but it's my understanding that a 530 is a synthetic and a fifth. Actually, it could be a 530 or a 540, and those are typically a synthetic, and the 1540 is usually the semi-synthetic. So I just make sure whatever the manual calls for, you can call a couple auto parts store and ask them what they've got. Rarely do we have an oil that it covers both. I've never seen one.
Well, I asked them at the dealer. I said, is this full synthetic or semi? And they told me semi.
I know, but who told you that? The person on the island?
No. This was back in in fact, it was back where you go get your oil changes. I talked to one of the guys, because they had detailed it, and I took it back there and talked to one of the guys there. Because I wanted to make sure, because I know the V8s use a different one, and the turbos use a little different oil.
It's really not a different oil. It's the 40 on the end of the thing
different
usually. The 40 on the end of a diesel, it's 540 or a 1540, says it's a diesel, right. But it can still be used in a variety of other cars, and it oftentimes is called for it. But the bottom line is if you've got a 530 in that, I want you to get on the internet and start querying 530 and see if you can find a semi or a full synthetic. All I'm saying to you, Harry, is I think there's a strong possibility that 530 is a synthetic. And I haven't seen anything come off of the parts line, off of any other lines, that didn't have a synthetic for the last 3 or 4 years.
I did buy a quart of oil just in case, and I think it did says semi-synthetic.
Okay.
Synthetic.
Okay.
And I think it was a 530. So.
Okay.
I don't know. I just,
Now, the 520 is usually a semi-synthetic, or it's a full synthetic. But anyway, it doesn't make any difference. We can hypothesize for the rest of our lives. You need to find out what it is. 3,000 is too early. I'm teasing you about wasting natural resources, but I can promise you this much. That motor will last as long as it's ever going to last if you just follow the owner's manual. But to change it earlier, I know this doesn't apply to you, but it does apply to many of your friends. They think if I change the oil early and if I rotate the Irish, that the car's going to love me and never going to leave me stranded, and nothing could be further from the truth. So that's the unfortunate part about it. But anyway, Harry, good luck to you. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, Mark, I have a quick question on how your industry does something.
2 minutes.
Shout out to Blackwell Industries and Tom and Christy, because they did a great job for me, trying to help me out. I had a brake bar spring break on my rear brakes on my pickup truck.
Okay.
And went to dealership, went to every other goofy place around town, AutoZone, all those guys. Could not find the spring. How do you guys, as an industry, because it's been discontinued, find that proper spring to take care of, properly take care of that brake bar and get everything set back in place? I had to go to a junkyard to find one.
What kind of car are you talking about, or car, truck?
Well, it's a pick-em-up truck, I'm sorry. It's a 99 Dodge Ram 1500, and that's, to me, that's not that old.
Were you looking for Dodge parts?
I went to Dodge, and they don't have it in stock. It's been deleted from them. Went to AZ Brake and Clutch. They don't carry it. NAPA doesn't carry
it. 1 minute.
Nobody carries the size that I needed.
Okay. Well,
so I had to go to the junkyard.
Okay.
That was my question. How the heck?
Okay. Well, you're telling me something that I am I am really, I know you've been told by all these guys, but first of all, we don't go by size. We go by application. We go by VIN number. And I, if my parts guys came to me and told me they couldn't find that, I'd send them home. Come on. I just don't understand that. I just don't understand that. We've never had that happen. I would hear about it if we did. We've just never had that happen. Now, if somebody's coming in and say, I need a brake bar, and you're calling it a brake bar, but actually it's part of the braking system, and I need this, and it's 6.5 inches long, they're probably not going to go pull 5 kits out to see if that's what it is. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bet you lunch that if you go to Blackwell, he can call and get you that entire brake spring kit that fast. We'll be back. Alrighty, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I've had a chance to calm down, but John, here's my offer to you. You were looking for a brake spring kit for your truck, and you couldn't find one, and you ended up going to the wrecking yard. So here's my offer to you. You go over to Blackwell's, and Blackwell's going to find you a kit, and it's going to be in a box, and it's going to be by application. And I'm going to pay him to put the kit in your truck, and I'm going to pay for the kit. Unless, of course, he can't find it, and then I'm going to buy you lunch. And so either way, you win. But I can't explain it, why you had a tough time. But I'm not talking about you now. But other people, other guys, oftentimes go in and say, you know, I want the Dodge parts, or I want the Forge parts and stuff like that. And many people in the industry don't understand that there's only two people that make springs and two people that make brake shoes and all that other kind of stuff. There's no such thing as a factory that makes Dodge parts. Maybe sheet metal parts, but not mechanical parts. So they buy them from everywhere else. 89% of the batteries in the United States are made at Johnson Controls, and they just put different labels on them. So, and there's only four kinds of oil out there that make base stock: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. So I know Blackwell can find it. I'm going to take that junkyard one you have out. He's going to hang the new spring set on both sides of the axle. I'll pay for his labor. I'll pay for the spring set, because it's going to be that easy. And because you know Tom Blackwell. All righty, who we got next, Gil?
We have Glenn.
Glenn, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question regarding what's a good voltage for a resting battery? And also, is North Star make a good battery?
I don't know who North Star is, but like I said, I tell people, I tell my mother, if I liked my sisters, I'd tell them, but buy the cheapest battery you can find. I mean, they're all going to be separated by 30-month, 40, 50, 60, 72-month warranties, but I'd buy the cheapest battery I could find. I mean, I'd shop price. I don't care if it's an AC Delco, or if it's a Motorcraft, or if it's a Dodge. I don't care if it's a Interstate battery. I don't care whose it is, Pep Boys. I would just... Now, if you wanted to weigh them all, you'd find out that they all weigh the same, and battery's as good as the lead. So a standing voltage, to answer your question on the standing voltage, is a fully charged battery's 13 volts. So you, when you pop the hood, and if you go in and you get between 12, 8, and 13, that's fine. The alternator should bring the voltage up from what we call key in your pocket voltage. Let's pretend it's 12, 8. So your key's in your pocket, you pop the hood, you check it. Now you start it up, hold the idle up a little bit, and it should go 1 volt over that. So if you're at 12, 8, you should end up at 13.8. That's a good rule of thumb with respect to the alternator working.
The reason I was asking is I'm detecting a different pitch in my starter motor, and I thought, oh, I'll measure it, and it's been routinely 12.6, you know, in between driving, you know, letting it rest for a few hours.
Okay, well, you're doing the testing wrong. The starter, when you hear a starter noise, we're putting the battery under load, and so what you want to do is take the voltage test when you're cranking the starter.
Well, I didn't do that. I have no way of doing that myself.
Well, I'm explaining it just so that you know if somebody's going to do it for you. Resting voltage has nothing to do with the sound of your starter.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, but 9.6 does. So the battery has to provide enough electricity to crank it over in a normal fashion under normal draw and normal amp draw and all that other stuff. So If you were to hook your voltmeter up to the battery and then you simply disable the ignition system or pull the fuel pump relay out of the box and just crank it over, it should be well above 11. And if it's dropping below 9.6, then either the battery's not good or the starter is pulling too many amps. And so then you have to make that decision on whether the battery can handle that kind of amperage, 2 or 300 amp draw, or whether it can't. So when you have a noise, when you have something unusual, that I'm gonna bracket your thing into that. I have an unusual sound when I'm cranking the motor over that I think indicates there's a problem. This is a test that most of us can run in 10 minutes.
Okay, then I'll have that performed. I appreciate it. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, you bet. Good luck to you. The electrical systems check at most shops is somewhere between $25 and $50. And the electrical system test involves checking the battery performance in every facet, checking the starter draw, checking the alternator output, checking the regulator, and checking for shorts and draws. So if the trunk light's open, we should be able to find that it has a draw on it. And so finding the draw is kind of difficult sometimes, but that's so you can get a complete electrical systems check. I'm going to change it from 25 to 50 to 50 plus or minus $30. $50 plus or minus $30. So 80 on the top side, 25, 30 on the bottom side, and that's what it costs. So then those of us with gray hair, we're not going to have any problem answering the question is, what's going on, or does this noise make any difference? Or sometimes I hit it and it goes click, click, and sometimes I hit the key and it goes click. Sometimes I hit the key and nothing happens. Those are all things that an electrical systems check would be the first thing that a good shop would do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us, and we'll be right back. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We're approaching the last 20 minutes of the show. If you have a car question or a car problem, or if you want some advice, or if you want to argue, then 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics in Sun City is the most trusted source as far as Mark Salem is concerned. There's lots of shops, but I really like Auto Dynamics. Family owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck and his son Derek for a very long time. They're on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. The north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue, Auto Dynamics, good place to have your car repair done. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I need a quick opinion. I took my car in. The air conditioning had stopped, and they checked it all over, and they came back and said it was the compressor clutch. And they said that... they recommended that I replace the whole system. He said I had three options. I could replace the clutch for $800, but they couldn't guarantee that the air conditioning would last because so many other things could go out. It's the original system in the car. I said, well, how much is for the whole system? And they said $1,800. And I said, well, what's the third option? And he said, go without air conditioning because it's getting cooler.
Well, when he says everything, is he going to replace the receiver dryer, all the hoses, the expansion valve, the entire compressor, the evaporator, the condenser? I mean, that's the whole system.
My impression was from the compressor back to the dash.
Okay. So he's going to do the evaporator, which is behind the glove box in the car. I would not agree with that. I'm only going to replace the evaporator if it's leaking Freon. I don't see much wrong with that. Sometimes
I don't think that was mentioned in the conversation.
Okay. I'm just struggling with the $1,800. First of all, let me tell you what I think. Most of the time when the clutch goes bad, it's because the compressor goes bad. So the belt's still trying to drive the clutch, but the compressor locks up. That's pretty easy to determine. You just grab the face of the clutch with a big wrench, and if it doesn't move, because the face of the clutch is connected to the compressor, but the pulley is connected to the belt, and then there's an idler portion of that, and then electronically we apply the clutch. So this isn't a tough call. At the very minimum, you're going to do a compressor. You're going to, blow out the oil and put oil back in it. And what kind of car is it again?
2000 RAV.
Okay, it's got some kind of a metering device, probably an orifice tube so we'd replace that. We'd hang a new compressor on it. We'd make sure it had the right amount of oil. And when we'd charge it up, we'd evacuate it and then charge it up, and you'd be out the door. So okay. I think the idea, let me change this. There are some guys out there that create the perception that you're always better off to just do everything because something might fail. So on okay. your RAV, how many miles has it got on it and what year is it?
It's a 2000 and it's got 106,000.
Okay. So you're really piling up the mileage on this, Jim. Do you drive to New York City every day?
No, it's 20 years old, and I only have 106,000.
I'm teasing you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Holy mackerel, that's just low miles.
I'm an old guy, and I only put on like 6,000 miles a year.
Okay. I'm not of the opinion. Here's the thing. Yes, there's some duplication of labor if something fails after we get done. But if you were my father, and I do love my father, I would say that I'm going to do is, if I want to check to see if the clutch can drive the compressor, and if it can't, then I want to replace the I want to do the entire compressor with a clutch, you know, not just a compressor, but the compressor that comes with a clutch, flush it out, change the orifice tube, and put it back together, and put the right amount of Freon in it, and send you on your way. Now that could be $1,800. Depending on where they buy the compressor, and I'm sure the labor isn't easy, and then you got the flushing, you got the orifice tube, R&R, take it out and put it in, and then you got all the refrigerant. So I'm thinking that's on the high side, but if it were between 1600, somewhere closer to 1600, I'd be a little bit more comfortable, but on pricing, I'm not the very best guy in the world. But you know, I'd just look him in the eye and just say, is the compressor locked up or not? Is that why the clutch locked up? And if he can't answer that, you need to maybe get a second opinion.
Well, I know on the estimate, it looked like the labor and the parts, it was like even Steven. It was 50-50.
I agree. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, the compressor and the parts and the Freon are going to be about half that bill. The rest of it's going to be labor. You're right.
Okay.
You're right.
Alrighty, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck to you, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. AC repair, we'll write that down. I got an email from a guy that had taken his car in, and they had done a bunch of work, and I wish I could find that piece of paper on my desk here, but I can't. He had this a bunch of work done, and then it didn't fix the problem, and they did an alternator and a battery, but they didn't put down on the work order what he said to them. They didn't write down the symptoms. They did a test drive, and they had it happen, and then they diagnosed it as a battery and an alternator. The bill was a lot of money, and he still got the problem. So then he takes it to another shop. And when he takes it to another shop, they diagnose it as the module, the engine module. And so at that particular point, then the question becomes, is he needs to get it fixed first. That's what I told him. You need to get it fixed first. Once you get it fixed, then everything will be answered. But on the second shop, we're going to hold his feet to the fire in a real upfront way in this respect. We're going to say to him, I want your assurance that you're going to fix this with this module. I just need your assurance. And he wrote in his email, well, they told me that they consulted with somebody and they agreed that the module was the problem. That's okay sometimes, but sometimes it's not. It depends on who this someone is. So a shop has to stand up, look their customer in the eye and say, I've diagnosed this. And the module's the problem, and I'm going to fix the module. I'm going to replace the module, reprogram the module, and when you leave here, that problem's not going to be here anymore. And I'm going to give you the old module back, too. You always ask for your old parts back, because if that module's, let's pretend it's $800. So he puts it in there, but he throws your old one away. Well, it doesn't fix the car. You go back and you go, hey, I didn't fix my car. But if you have the old module, you hand it to him and say, put my old one back in, please, because it didn't fix the problem I asked you to fix if you want to start over. But we have to start over from a zero point of view. So you need to refund me all the money I spent that didn't move me to, you know, from first base to second base. So he's got a real problem because he's got this first shop out there that didn't do anything, and the bill was pretty big. So he has to give them a chance first and explain to them, you didn't fix my problem. They're going to say, well, you needed a battery and alternator anyway. Oh, gosh. That's how you have to protect yourself. You have to make sure that they write down what you say on the work order. Customer says that he drives down the road, the dash lights go crazy, they blink on and off, and I'm being facetious here, the horn honks, the windshield wipers flap five times. That's what the customer says. Then the work order should talk to the customer in writing. We drove the car, we verified the complaint. We did this, and the complaint was still there. Then we did this, and then we found out that this is the problem. So we want to replace this, and it's the part, the labor, and the diagnostic charge is $400. So we're going to fix it. And then you say, I need to make sure that we're going to fix it because I don't want to pay for a guess. I want to pay for a fix. There's a big difference between a guess and a fix. If we're guessing, we're guessing with your money unless we tell you. Now, I'm the first one to say, I don't want to guess, but there's times I do guess because we're so solid in our diagnosis. So we say, you know what, we'll guess, and if you don't have to pay for it if we don't fix it. But we're really comfortable that this is going to fix your car. But I'm telling you, it's a guess. So as long as I write down, I'm going to do this, you're going to okay the $400, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to fix it, and if it doesn't fix it, I'm going to give you your $400 back. It's okay. There's times that you say it's got to get worse before it's easy. It has to get worse before we can find it. It can't just happen once a month. We're not going to be able to find that. So let's wait till it gets worse, because it'll be easier to find once it gets worse. Because when you have an intermittent problem, you only have a couple of choices. You can start guessing, or you can wait till it gets worse. That's it. And if you wait till it gets worse, then it's going to be easier to find and easier to fix. So those are the kinds of things. This gentleman, I feel sorry for him, because he's got two shops involved now, and he needs to hold the second shop feet to the fire, but they may feel like that they're being punished for the first shop's inability to fix it. He needs to fix that when he talks to them. I had another shop work on it. I'm not holding you to that standard, but I did learn a lesson that I really need to have a conversation, so I want to have that conversation with you. Please assure me that this module that you're going to put in, body control module, I think is what it was, this module you're going to put in is going to fix my problem. And to safeguard me, I want my old part back. And then that way, if it acts up again, then we can maybe return the part and put my old one back in and start over. So those are the kinds of conversations that you should have with people in our industry. It's okay to have that conversation. I enjoy it when the customer's there. You see, if my staff is solid in their diagnosis, that doesn't scare us. That doesn't scare us at all. Do we make mistakes? Yep, we do. Yeah, and we follow what we preach. So if I put an ignition module or a control module or a body module in a car and it doesn't fix it, we always give the customer the old part back. And the very first thing when they call us, hopefully they're not yelling and screaming at us, but if they call us, I say, we put the old module in your car. Bring it back, and I'm going to put the old module back in. I'm going to put you back the way I found you. I'm going to give you all your money back, and then hopefully you'll trust us to go back and see what we missed. So, and there's a lot of shops that do that. I'm not the only dog in that teepee. Everybody I know and I respect would do it that way. The real hitch in the giddy up is this. No, I threw that thing away. and woo, baby, then what do you do then? It's a $400 module, and they threw the old one away. But I think the communication gap was our fault, because we didn't say, please hang on to this until we're absolutely sure your car is fixed. Please, just put it in your trunk or something. Or if you want, we'll hang on to it for you. But we're going to call you and bug you, every 2 weeks. How you doing? How you doing? How you doing? But it's easier just to box it up and put it in the trunk of the car. After a month or two or 3 months goes by, the owner can throw it away. It's fixed. But it's just a safeguard. Now, you're not going to want an oil filter in the trunk of your car. I know the difference there. But what we call hard parts, a windshield wiper motor, a voltage regulator. I'm just kind of searching. I'm closing my eyes and looking at a car. And, maybe the master cylinder after you drain the brake fluid out of it. And you put it in the box that it came in. Those are the kinds of things. Anything electronic, you could do your alternator. You could say, I want my alternator back, and then if it's fixed, I'm happy. And then I'm going to say, well, there's a $50 core on your alternator, so I'm going to charge you the $50. Then when you bring it back to me and we know we're square, then I'll give you the $50 back. But I have to pay for the core charge if I don't return the core, the old part. So if you want to keep it and take it, then I need you to pay for it. But if you've been a customer of mine for a long time, I'm going to let you go. So those are the kinds of things. But I think that last thing I said is kind of important, is if you've been a customer of mine for a long time, we're probably not going to forgive the core charger, let you walk out with a $50 alternator if this is your first time here. We're going to probably collect the core charge from you. But if you've been doing business with us for the last 20 years, then we're going to walk away from that. And like I said, there's lots of other shops that are just like us. We're who we are today because we've copied all these really good ideas from all these other shops. So it's not that I'm thumping my chest. I'm saying that I know there's a lot of good guys. And if you want to find them, then go to my website, marksalem.com. MarkSalem.com, and there's a list of the best car repair shops in town, and here's my promise. If you have a problem, and for instance, the Better Business Bureau says the shop has to give you back $2,000. If the shop doesn't give you back $2,000, then I fire the shop from the list, and I will pony up the money and cover it up to $5,000. So my cap is $5,000. Have I ever had to pay that money? The answer is no. Have I ever come close? One time. The bill was $2,000. At the very last minute, the shop decided that it was a good idea to just pay the $2,000 and let's get out from underneath this big mess. Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email. Mark with a K at MarkSalem.com. Please drive safe. Please drive nice, and see you next week.